just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is conducting a survey. Help us shape the types of news, public affairs, and music programming KBOO broadcasts in the future. Tell us how you listen to KBOO, and we'll use this feedback to help serve you better. The survey is anonymous. However, you will have an opportunity to provide your contact information to enter a drawing. 10 lucky winners will receive a $50 gift card. Complete the community survey before Sunday, July 16th. Go to our website at kboo.fm/survey23. That's kboo.fm/survey23. Thank you in advance for your time and your feedback. Stay tuned for KBOO's next strategic plan coming soon.
It is Hard Knock Radio, Davey D, hanging out with you this afternoon. Yesterday, we started an in-depth conversation, a roundtable, about the pros and cons of artificial intelligence, better known as AI. We have an esteemed panel of guests, movers and shakers in the entertainment industry and in Silicon Valley, who have weighed in and have been sharing with you their insight, their perspectives, and predictions for where things are going. Among our guests are Chao Coker. He is a writer, screenwriter. You know him for his work with Luke Cage, the movie Notorious. He also was a writer on Creed 2, among other things, former music editor for the LA Times. We have Domingo Padilla, producer extraordinaire. His work includes being the primary producer for Big Pun, Rakim, Kool G Rap, and KRS-One, just to name a few. He is also the owner of Media Famous, which is a distribution and marketing company. So he has been weighing in. We have Melissa Negron Alto from Multimedia, which has been responsible for putting together a lot of set designs, doing film editing, and really has been on the scene over the past 30, 40 years when it comes to hip hop. And we also have Quincy Phillips from Lighthouse Silicon Valley, which is an organization that has been dealing with equity and diversity in the Valley, but he has also been the manager of several professional athletes and artists. And he's our go-to guy when it comes to all things Silicon Valley. So with that being said, we want to jump back into our conversation. You're catching the conclusion of our discussion on artificial intelligence, AI. So with that being said, let us get back into it.
You know?
Well, it's interesting, you know, going, as I'm thinking, like, my wife hates the AI. Right, she sees my pictures, like, I have people that want to buy the stuff I've made, and she's like, I hate it, I think it's whack. And it's like, you're going to be a hater. It's like, I'm going to be a grade A hater, because, you know, I learned about some of the artists that I referenced through her. You know, I'm like, oh, man, I didn't know about this Riri Templeton. I didn't know about that. So I go and look at them, and then I reference, and she's like, well, Riri's dead, and does so-and-so know that you referenced their art? You know, you should call them up and tell them that this picture is really, you know what I mean? So she's more of like, in your thing, everybody gotta be a piece of the pie.
Shared ownership.
Shared ownership.
I mean, and that's the problem that we're having, because what someone's genius is, like, you're making me cringe through this whole conversation. I mean, again, I'm like, no, it's not good. What you're talking about still isn't good. The essence is being lost, right? We're losing substance, you know, each time it steps away from it. But I think it is. It's the shared ownership, and that's even where we're at in the how so many people are jumping into it, whether it's entertainment or some other field. The question of that shared ownership, if it's stated, if it's understood, how we participate.
But if you're using 30 different things, is it shared ownership, or are you just taking resources that exist and then creating something new?
But are you thinking about an old capitalistic way or system, right? Or do we now with this have the opportunity to create a new one, right? I mean, you keep to me referencing some old stuff that, yeah, how do we make it? How do we make money now? Let me just grab this and mix this and, man, they might like it. They like it. I love it. But that same system is the problem that created the inequities that we continue to see now. So I'm trying to figure out how we address, or, you know, that part. And I think what we're all talking about, that collective partnership, ownership, and understanding of it, right, with the lessons learned of before. It's like, but we started with the funky drummer.
But he should get paid. We know it. But in theory, we're supposed to be able to execute our ideas a lot more easily. So I am not a painter. All right. And so I know I'm thinking.
And why are you not a painter? There's skills and technique. Like, there's things that it takes. And it feels like you try to do this cheat code thing, which is another generational thing that's losing it. So you're like, let me create this popcorn stuff. Okay, let's put it in.
But this is what they said. You sound like I'm old enough to know. I'm going to pull out my age card now. I'm old enough, young man, to remember when we started mixing records. There were musicians that came out and said, y'all are just taking our stuff and you're not really going into the studio and thinking of this melody. I don't care if you are doing this turntable thing that y'all are doing. That's not real music. I heard people say that all throughout the 70s and the 80s. And then when we started sampling, it became even worse, right? But as far as I'm concerned, the Domingos of the world and others, the Premieres, were artists in their own right. They had a vision and they were able to take existing material and create something new. And I feel that, you know, as a DJ, I'm taking existing material and I'm creating art with my mixes, you know? And
yeah, that, see, but I the thing is
this that, is Chael talking. Go ahead.
You know, this is where I think people have to be future minded. Okay. So like you are mixing something and all of a sudden it's like, imagine if the Soul Searchers were business savvy enough to take advantage of Ashley's Roach clip. Mm-hmm. So they might not have the rights. And, but then all of a sudden, once, you know, everything from Jack the Ripper to Paid in Full references this one moment, imagine if the band was still together and then they were able to tour on that and they were able to, you know, do things because, you know, from with a live gate and get out there. And then at the same time, you know, really the best version of it is one of my favorite stories in all of hip hop, which is when Aerosmith came to the studio with Run DMC to make Walk This Way. Run DMC didn't even barely knew who Aerosmith was. All Jam Master Jay knew was, there was a song called, he used to call, the name of the album was Toys in the Attic. Right. And all he knew was that the beat on Toys in the Attic, that first doom, da, doom, doom, da, that was Walk This Way. That's all he knew.
Yeah.
Was he would just use that beat constantly all the time. And so when they come to the studio, he's like, who are these guys? And then the whole thing about like Run DMC doing their lyrics from the actual record and not doing their own lyrics, but doing it in a hip hop way. All of a sudden, you know, that record comes out Run DMC goes to new heights. Aerosmith is completely resurrected. The reason that Aerosmith is a $100 million touring band and made all their money is because of Run DMC. But they were ready for what happened, and they didn't get closed-minded. They, you know, about it. They were able to appreciate the new generation, but at the same time, like, feed it off in a different way. But I think we have to be able to, as equally as open-minded, you know?
You make my point, Chael. When the iron strikes, you got to have avenues of hustle. As a writer, people have taken my articles and even my interviews and put them up on YouTube and, you know, random. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I could look at it and be like, nah, take that down. But you know what? Those Tupac interviews that I did, you know, I've been able to license them all over the place because mm-hmm. of the exposure. Some of the writing has gotten me gigs because I wasn't in Toronto, but people seen that, right? So I think you always got to position yourself that once you enter into the industry of commerce, right, which is like you are selling your creativity, other people are going to feed off that creativity and kick it down the road. I can't get mad if you are inspired by something I do and make $1 billion off it, or should I?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing. It's like, I mean, I never threw out an interview tape. So I've got hundreds of hours of interviews now. Right. And so, like, people have gold just laying around their house. Yeah. And I think people have to start thinking about different ways to use that. And I think on the artist standpoint, like, technology has kind of changed everything. So, for example, what used to take you hours or days with a photograph, now with an Instagram filter, you can just render it immediately, you know? And TikTok has forever changed film language, because now you've got your average person, like you know, I used to always love these things where somebody does something and they put the camera over and they're wearing something different and all that stuff. That's jump cutting. That's, you know, people used to have to go to film school to learn how to do that. And people right. are just doing it naturally on they're doing, you know, 4 or 5 years worth of film school techniques with a song just automatically on their own. It's a new language.
That says to me that a filmmaker then can take their creativity that is major to me. They can take that simple thing and mm-hmm. take it to the next level. I want to bring Domingo in, and also I had a question for you, Q. Quick question. We're talking about, you know, the renderings and things that are happening, and they don't always look in the way that they're supposed to. Has AI advanced where they can absolutely duplicate things to the T? Is there like a version of AI that has not been released to the public where they can make this conversation like we look exactly the way that we do, we sound exactly the way that we do? In other words, do we have just the basic version, and if some billionaires, which is where my concern would be, they get the pro version where everything is accurate to the T, then that's like, okay, then is inequality. Why do you get the pro version and I don't?
Yes, and as we say out here, yeah, most definitely. We've played with things well before they are out there. I mean, they are definitely technical and merits to that, right? You know, folks tinkering, we are trying to have the best minds who have, you know, focused entire lifetimes on this stuff in those rooms, trying to ideate it, get it better so that it can reach the public at that point. I think you've probably read around things where police have gotten, you know, or yes. justice systems have gotten into, you know, some of these systems before it came out. So yes, and there is a lot more, like I was talking about earlier, started the conversation with virtual reality and all these other things. It's labs literally everywhere. Stanford, Northwestern, my alma mater, right? Like there are all these labs everywhere, and we're connected, right? Like they are connected with Google, they are connected with Microsoft. Like if you read the tea leaves, right, if you go on these sites, you will see something Microsoft, right? But you will end up seeing some of the biggest institutions that are there, which are also funded and connected to the federal government, right? So especially as we get into these academia research institutions, that is just the pipeline to the government, right? And so they have total access. So right. There are rooms that I have not been in that I know exist at federal levels as well. So yes, and more.
You reminded me, I was once asked to be a part of a trial. And what was interesting in the trial, the defendant the defendant had a video that the police had, and it was blurry and you couldn't tell, and the police are like, we have a camera that's on this corner, and John Doe walked by the corner, and they're like, look at his shoes and all that. But apparently John Doe had done something, so the federal government got involved, and the federal government had a camera that was crystal clear. Right. It was like the feds have their own camera. And so they showed it. I remember they showed it in court. And it was like, like there's the mark on his forehead. There's the food in his teeth. And it's like they had these satellite type cameras that we didn't know were surveilling.
Will people. Smith, so, the enemy of the state. Yeah. How many years ago was that? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Minority Report.
Yeah. Right.
That's like 2 decades ago.
Yeah. So I guess my point is that, you confirmed it, that there is a pro level. And I guess we should be very concerned about the pro level and whether or not nefarious actors are using that pro level version of AI, because we might not even know what's going on. Domingo, I want to ask
companies
you.
Let me just say this last statement. Yeah. Tech companies have their own apps that are ideated before the public. So even, let's take it to Microsoft Word. There's versions of that the public don't even see yet. So everything that you see out there, there are versions within those companies where just those employees have access to tinkering and toying with the next level of things to come.
Can we get copies of that? Can you hook us up?
I cannot, because you have to have that company device for sure. And they surely take it away from you afterwards.
Domingo, Melissa, and Che, I'll start off with you, Domingo. Let's come back to basics. We're all hip hop folks, and so is Q. But it's about creativity, and the one who's most creative gets to win the game. And we have never allowed technology to be something that we're scared of. In fact, with everybody else that was, and was like, I'm going to take this technology, I'm going to flip it to the next level. You're a producer. You should be, at this point, able to take this AI to the next level. Cheo is hip-hop, right? We know he's a writer and all that, but you're supposed to, Cheo, be able to take those interviews that are sitting in your thing right now and be able to create some epic movie and do something creative and maybe even take into account what Quincy was saying, make it equitable for everybody. Melissa, you've been creative. You're supposed to take this to the next level. You said that you've already been doing it, but I would argue that at this point in time, we're at a point where we should be able to, with all the history, take things to unforeseen levels and maybe even own that the way in which we do it. I'll start off with you, Domingo, as the producer, because y'all are always looking for ways to flip the script.
Yeah, I mean, even with AI, it's way ahead of the game. Like I said, because I've seen it. There's sites out there that I type in the type of sample I want, and it'll create the sample for you. With the
really?
You tell it the type, you tell the type of instruments you want. Like, let's say you put in, I want a 70s funk soul sample that sounds like James Brown with Clyde Stubblefield playing the drums, and it'll do it. I've seen it. So
is that cheating, or is that just you being creative?
I don't know. I don't think it's cheating because guess what? There's a plugin that a lot of people don't know of called The Mouth. It's been out for years. You basically would hum or speak or whatever rhythm you want, and The Mouth would give it back to you as music. So that's probably like the first steps of AI back. I mean, this plugin is maybe more than 10 years old. But I think it can make a producer more creative, because now you're making compositions that are technically your own. Because if it's creating samples that you thought of those are technically your samples.
Yeah. That's how I feel.
Yeah. Those are there you go. With the pictures.
My wife disagrees. She's like, man, you this whack. she ain't feeling it.
So if you just because you use the description of I want a James Brown sound to sample, it's not James Brown. You know what I'm saying?
But you might say, but your creativity might be, I want James Brown sample, and we might not know that Melissa's a drummer, mixed with Melissa, you know, Calderon, you know, drumming.
Right.
And now you have a sound, and it's like, where'd you get that? Well, you're not supposed to tell people your prompts. You're not supposed to know, like, I noticed this over here is a drummer, and I got something unique that I added with James Brown, flipped with Sly Stone, and got something totally creative.
Yeah.
Now, Melissa might be mad, but, you know, but you shouldn't have put it out there.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. It's like everything is, to a certain degree, if you're putting it out there, somebody's going to reference it, because that's the whole point of you putting it out there. You want people to consume your content. At what point do you say, okay, well, you're consuming it, you're remixing it, you're now selling it. I think that's the point where when you're putting a dollar point on something, you're making money off it. That's where people kind of get a little pressed. Because, oh, well, now you're making money off of something that I maybe am never made money off of. And I don't personally feel that way, but there are, you know, there's like an entire catalog of artists who don't have access to like decent, you know, decent income, and they're the backbone of hip hop, right? So how do we make sure that everybody gets, like, you know, a piece? But also, I mean, the other thing that's happening right now is that prompts are starting to get censored. So, and it depends on which, you know, app or AI that you go to, you're starting to see censorship happen at like just the prompt level. So that becomes like a place where people can almost block you from creating content as well. Like, oh, I want these terms now, you know, blacklisted from the AI so that you can, for example, you can't anymore make a mock image of, Elon Musk as a baby on a certain platform. Can't do that anymore. It's actually like now blacklisted. So then you get a message saying that's an inappropriate prompt, and, you know, we'll move on to the next. So, you know, we're really getting into the area where it's like about rights, it's about ownership, it's about income, and it's about fair use. And that's always been the tension really in creating and making the profit off of it.
Right. Chael, you're a writer. You have your own style. You know, many people don't know Chael is a person that did Luke Cage. You know, I wish you could bring that back for like a third season. You know, make that happen, brother. You know, but you know, you spend a lot of time writing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, now, every day.
But now what I want to do is I want to get Jeff Chang writing, you know, mix it with some Chael writing, and maybe some James Baldwin. And now, you know, Dave is like this incredible writer. Is that just me being creative? Do you get mad about it? Or, you know, is this the fear that you may have?
I mean, here's the thing, okay? Like, everybody has influences. And what you do is you basically try to copy your influences until you create your own voice. But in that period of time, you know, you build the muscles. Like, you know, the reason that boxing is one of my favorite sports is there's only about six different punches, you know, but who really is going to get up and run 5-6 miles? Who really is going to go to the gym for 2 and 3 hours? Who's going to do all the sparring and everything else? Like, when somebody takes off their shirt, you see those muscles, they spent the time. But now imagine if you could just go into, like, do the Captain America thing and just hop in a capsule and come out, and then you got muscles immediately. Then there's a lot of things that are lost in that process. There's a lot of, you know, everyone's trying to get their own version of the super soldier serum to a certain extent. And when you do that, you're losing something in that. You know, what I think this is going to do is going to make things that are handmade and done and clearly rendered in a non-AI way even more valuable. Live performance is going to be more valuable. I mean, the reason that a Lamborghini is looked at differently than other cars or certain Porsches is because they're, you know, there are actually like 10 or 15 people that work on a car, as opposed to it just being, you know, down an assembly line that's anonymous. And so I think part of it's going to be like, you know, definitely from, I'm thinking from a writing standpoint, getting more and more into trying to do Broadway and trying to do things, you know, where you have a precedent that's set where you get a piece of the live gate and you're also giving people an experience that they have to experience in person. That's why you're seeing a lot more stars do Broadway, because, you know, like, I mean, I think you just have to figure out different ways to flip it. And you can't be afraid of any of this stuff. You just have to just figure out, you have to become entrepreneurial. Like, you unfortunately, from a writing standpoint, you just can't be a writer anymore. But it's no different than back in the day. You could have just been a DJ, but then wait a minute. Okay, now I got to become a producer.
Yeah.
And then, okay, now I got to be a label owner. Like, so, you know, you keep having to evolve in order to keep doing.
We're on the same page.
That you love to do. I mean, think about someone like Dr. Dre. You know, Dre starts off as a K-Day mix master and DJing around the way. You know, eventually becomes a DJ, eventually becomes a producer, and then all of a sudden has to become a label head for real. And then with the headphones thing, that's where he makes his real money. You know, it turns out it wasn't the masters that were worth all the money. It was the culture. It was learning how to exploit the culture in ways to other products that made Jay-Z, Diddy, and all these billionaires, I'm sorry. That's what made them the billionaires. It wasn't, you know, hip hop gave them the credibility and gave them the entrepreneurial mindset. But once they applied that to, you know, bricks and mortar, like alcohol and clothing and other things, that's where they were able to kind of elevate themselves to this new level. And everyone has to now figure out their own version of that, you know, because we can complain about AI to the moon. There's no putting that genie back in the bottle, yeah. You know, and it makes what we do, you know, whatever creative field that you have, even that much more important to preserve it. And then at the same time, you have to learn how to find things that this thing can't do. And, you know,
and keep your prom secret.
You basically have to become a cast iron skillet. Like, you know, like, I love to cook, right? And when you start cooking with cast iron, food tastes different. Like, you know, or if you have like aluminum pans, I mean, it's like, that's the thing. It's like, you have to find, you know, it's a staple of every kitchen, every real kitchen. You know what I'm saying? So like, how do you become a cast iron skillet? How do you become this thing that no matter how many different ways you can, you know, air fry all types, there's going to be one thing in your kitchen that is irreplaceable. And that's what that is, you know?
Appreciate that. Chael, how do we get a hold of you or any projects that are coming up that we should be on the lookout for?
I'm just constantly in the lab. For me, I've just, you know, what Marvel taught me was the importance of secrecy, not in terms of being secret about what I'm working on or writing, but just like when you talk at length about what you're doing and people can't get it, it's better just to just come out with something when they can go out for it.
Okay.
And like, you know, so, but the thing is I constantly tweet. So, you know, Chael_Coker at Twitter. I'm on the gram every once in a while, but you know, like for me, it's just, I'm out there and, you know, and trust me on this, if you talk about me on Twitter, I'm like Candyman, you know, I hear my name 3 or 4 times. I'm right there.
All right, Chael, I appreciate that. Domingo, how do we get a hold of you and any last thoughts on this AI thing?
It's Instagram's Beats by Domingo, Facebook Beats by Domingo, MediaFamous.com, marketing and distribution. And as far as the AI, like I told you, I think the technology is incredible. I just hope it gets used the right way and not abused the wrong way.
Okay. Well, I'm about to make this album tomorrow. I'm going to get some Domingo beats. I'm going to get some Domingo beats unreleased from
people.
But you know what? I am getting ready to do a big block party. Prince versus Michael Jackson. I need to talk to you to get some Domingo beats to, you know, kind of flip in with my Prince mixes. But I'll talk to you afterwards. There you go.
Yeah.
Take advantage. That's why I had you on the show, so I could come up with that one.
I know.
Melissa, last thoughts from you?
I I also work with Lincoln Center, and I work with them in education. And I'm telling you that while AI is scary to the establishment, to kids, this opens up an entire world for them in ways that they'd never believe. And I think you're going to see a wave of creativity that you're going to be blown away, because we're giving kids these tools really early, and they're learning to, you know, they're learning to use them, and they're learning to navigate a world with AI in it as part of their mindset. So it's both good and bad. It's scary and innovative. It's definitely the new frontier. And you know, it all comes down to who has access, and it's making sure that everybody has access to these tools. And just think about it, like all the kids who wanted to go to art school back in the day, and there was no way that was ever going to happen. Now you have access to things where, like, you can create art in the style of anything and never have to touch a paintbrush. While yes, you don't have the muscles, the flow, you know, maybe even the context and culture to understand why oil was used in certain ways, you still have the ability to create something. And if you love it, then perhaps you'll dive back into the actual medium of it. But I think it's an incredible learning tool. That's the way
they may
look at it.
Or they may create a totally new medium.
Exactly. You know? It's going to iterate on itself, and it's going to iterate on youth, and it's going to integrate with, I don't know if you, 6 months ago, if you saw the gorillas take over Times Square, where they did AR everywhere. And you know, the combination of AR and AI in a place like that is, like, suddenly now with AI, you could put people's faces on some of these AR created characters that are all over the place. There's many applications, and I think it's exciting. I'm not scared of it. But you know, also people need to get paid, and people need credit.
Appreciate that. And how do we get a hold of you, Melissa?
Multo.com, MULTO.com, or Multo Media NYC on Instagram.
Multo Media NYC. Q, you started off, and you alluded to that, you know, there are other things. And ooh, I want to ask you, as we end out, should we be making sure that ourselves and definitely our kids are learning how to create AI for themselves versus being on the consumer end? Is there a path for that? Should we be creating AI more than just for entertainment, but should we be thinking about how do we create AI to solve cancer or to improve eyesight and do other things like that? You know, put it to these other vast uses that others are doing. If the police are using it, maybe we should do AI to monitor the police in a more efficient way, right? So can you speak to that and let us know how we can get a hold of y'all at Lighthouse Silicon Valley?
Yeah, most definitely. I would say, again, yes, and. So just to the entertainment and all of that, let's think through the lessons learned of, you know, our own pain points in these industries. Again, whether it's me being at Northwestern and watching that fight that then led to the NIL, right, at O'Bannon, you know, on the way, like, use our partnerships to figure out these paths. But in everything else, yes, please. We will be in the fall actually producing a live event that then will be broadcast and disseminated at places like Sundance around our first pioneering study around artificial intelligence and health equity, right? So wearable devices, all of those things, right? Wow. Even barriers, you know, into it. How do we get more of us involved? Things that could be beneficial, you know, whether it's cancer or some of those things, like, what are our skin tones? If you find a bump, what does it look like for us, our skin tone, rather than all of the white images that AI is populating to find it, right? So, like, all of, think about any possible area that we have our own unique lived experience, bring that into this field. There's a lot more diversity, you know, things being called out for AI right now. We are in the midst of that. That's why you're seeing some of the pauses or the cause for pausing some of the development. This is the time to just jump in. Jump in, and any place that you can see, go to Google, go to Microsoft, go to any of the places that you think they have AI. Jump in there, find some of their internships, apprenticeships. They're all popping up right now. You can find us at Lighthouse Quency, Quency, at Lighthouse, S, as in Sam, V as in Victor.org. Hit me up. That's the best way. Not on my socials, because I'm going to block you on that because of AI, right? But or Davey's prompts. Davey's prompts will block you too. But no, thank y'all for allowing us to be a part of this, and can't wait for the next one.
Man, so are you going to get me the pro level version of this stuff?
I'm not going to.
I mean, that's the only reason why. That's why you're on the show.
You're going to have Domingo beats on here. Like, no, I'm not going to help you. You're going to find a different way.
Deo, Domingo, Melissa, Q, thank you so much. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Hard Knock Radio. East, west, north, south, radio, conectados. Man. Every set, every hood, barrio to barrio. Y'all stand up, stay righteous. Speaking to the thugs, one love. We know where y'all at. Round Buffalo. It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415s bumping Hard Knock Radio. Brown Buffalo, all up in your stereo. And to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from these hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, rapping to the hard side. Learning from the hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, rapping to the hard side.
And again, you're tuned to Hard Knock here on the Pacifica Network. Up next, we're going to bring you a conversation featuring Michelle Alexander as she spoke at the 2023 NCORE Conference. Stay tuned.
Well, first, I want to say I'm delighted to be here. Thank you so much for having me. Woo! I was actually supposed to be here in 2012 and wasn't able to come due to a back injury. So I'm just delighted to actually be here with this incredible group of folks. Have I noticed changes? Yes. You know, we were in so many ways living in a different world in 2010 when the book was first released. In fact, when I was writing the book, Barack Obama was on the campaign trail, bound to become the first Black president of the United States. And I remember, while I was researching and writing the book, wanting so much for him to win, and also worrying that if he did win, that no one would ever take the claims that I was making in the book seriously, that our racial history is not past but present, and that we hadn't ended racial caste in America, we had merely redesigned it. And when the book was first released in 2010, you know, a year after he was inaugurated, it was almost impossible to get any mainstream attention at all. We were awash in post-racialism, and We Have Overcome, and Black History Months were all really celebratory events, acknowledging that there's still a ways to go, but wow, look at Barack Obama. Look at all the Black faces in high places. Haven't we made extraordinary progress? Isn't it just a matter of time before we all reach the promised land? And, you know, in many ways, what has happened over the last, 12 years now, has been, really, to borrow like James Baldwin's term, just the most beautiful and terrible of times. We have seen the explosion of these incredible movements that were, beyond my imagination, really, when I was writing the book. At that time, the bipartisan consensus around mass incarceration was seemed nearly unbreakable, and there was near silence even amongst many progressive folks and within the civil rights community about mass incarceration, the drug war, and law and order politics. So these movements that have erupted, and I really credit Ferguson in particular, the uprisings in Ferguson, for being the moment at which public consciousness began to shift in a profound way, and organizing and movement building began to take off in a serious way. I really credit Ferguson even more than the Black Lives Matter hashtag for the expansion of our imagination and the birth of a new wave of movement building. And so the movements that have been born, the incredible strides that have been made, and there I want to acknowledge the formerly incarcerated people who have had incredible victories in this time, organizing Ban the Box campaigns, banning the box on employment applications and housing applications. I think the majority of people in the United States now live in jurisdictions where the box has been banned on employment applications, at least in the public sector, and often for housing, which is huge, a huge victory that again seemed unimaginable back then. There have been huge gains in drug policy, legalizing marijuana, reducing sentences for nonviolent drug-related offenses in many states. Unfortunately, that spirit of reform hasn't extended to those convicted of violent offenses. That's a whole other conversation I would really love to have, because unfortunately, the system of mass incarceration rationalizes itself by pointing to those who've been convicted of violent offenses, and we have a very long way to go to opening hearts and minds around the importance of including people who've been convicted of violent offenses in a spirit of compassion rather than overwhelming punitiveness. But there have been huge gains in drug policy reform. There have also been important gains in terms of the birth of the abolition movement, which I credit for changing the nature of the questions we ask ourselves. Instead of just asking, should somebody be locked up for, 12 years or 5 years or 3 years, the questions are being asked, why are we locking people up at all? Why are we putting them in cages? Why are we putting them in cages? To create communities in which prisons were utterly unnecessary at all. And so it's just extraordinary the gains that have been made in terms of movement building around abolition as well. And so, there's so much to celebrate and rejoice in that way. But of course, we also have lived through the election of Donald Trump and the rise of authoritarianism in the United States and around the world. And we are living in very, very dangerous times. Mm-hmm. And although there have been important reform gains, we have about the same number of people behind bars as we did when I first wrote the book. The prison population has declined somewhat. And the number of people under correctional control in many states has declined somewhat, but we still today have about 2 million people locked up, and more than 5 million people under correctional control, in prisoner jail, on probation or parole, and tens of millions of more who are subject to legal discrimination, can't vote, and who remain part of the undercast that has been treated as disposable, over the last several decades. And so I am alarmed and concerned about the rise of white nationalism, which was not, non-existent before. It existed subterranean fashion, and it was expressed through dog whistles and at the ballot box
And it, the politics of white supremacy are a big part of the reason why we have a system of mass incarceration in the first place. It was a backlash against the civil rights movement. Those law and order politics can be traced to the rise of the civil rights movement. And now we're in a position where after having our first black president and the emergence of racial justice movements that have begun to awaken large numbers of people in the United States and around the world, we are facing a backlash that isn't comparable in many respects to what black communities faced near the end of Reconstruction. And we are going to have to build movements, become organized, and demonstrate a level of courage and truth-telling and solidarity that I think well surpasses even what was necessary during the civil rights era.
Thank you. Thank you. Talking about the backlash and truth telling, I was thinking about the misinformation campaign that has been, again, always there, but is very, I think, pronounced in the current day. And so I'm wondering, kind of thinking about the work that I guess we know you for, right, with the new Jim Crow and the focus on mass incarceration. What are some of the misconceptions that you think maybe even young people today, right, are learning, right, about what mass incarceration actually is? Do you see this as a moment where the actual truth that you put forward is still, I guess, being expressed, or is this more of a, let's walk this back and pretend as if these very real issues that you speak about don't exist anymore? So I'm wondering what your thoughts are about that.
Yeah, well, I would say one of the big misconceptions that I run into again and again.